IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. I am Pranay Kutasthane and today I have with me Mr. Anand Arni and Suyash Desai. And today we are going to discuss about COVID-19 in India's neighborhood, what's been going on there, because we are hearing not much news about what's happening in India's neighborhood. So we thought we'll just have a conversation on this and try to understand what's the situation like in our neighborhood and what are the responses, the impact of this pandemic on India's neighborhood as well. So let's begin first, Suresh, with you. You've been looking at Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. So let's begin with Bangladesh. I always believe Bangladesh is India's most important geographic neighbor. So Suresh, what's happening in Bangladesh with respect to COVID-19?
So Bangladesh got into action very early, even before WHO declared it as a public health emergency. WHO declared it as a public health emergency on 30th January. Bangladesh got into action on 27th of January. So they started checking everyone on airports. They restricted, though the quarantine measures were not implemented, but they started restricting the limited travel. They started giving more and more advisories to people. So they got into action early, and that is replicated in the number of cases. So that is reflected in the number of cases that they are facing right now. They hardly have 200 to 250 cases, but the WHO estimate says that this will go up because of the population density in Bangladesh. So Bangladesh also played a proactive role in evacuating their students from Hubei, which was the epicenter for the coronavirus outbreak for past 2 months. Now the epicenter has shifted. So they evacuated around 300 students, PhD students from Hubei and Wuhan. The first case which was reported in Bangladesh was obviously due to international travel. Three tourists traveling from Italy were detected with the coronavirus in Bangladesh. And then due to their travel, when Bangladesh backtraced their travel history, then they realized that this is spreading. But immediately quarantine was kept implemented. And so now the cases are in control. Though death rate is high, but the number is also low because it's not more than 200 to 250 cases right now. But as I have mentioned earlier, WHO says that this can increase. And Bangladesh has asked for helping hand to India for the supplies of HCQ. Similarly, in case of Sri Lanka.
Before we go to Sri Lanka, I wanted to ask this question to Mr. Arni. Mr. Arni, given that Iran has been one of the other epicenters, right, like in Pakistan and in Afghanistan, the spread started from Iran. Are there any linkages between Iran and Bangladesh as well? Is there any travel? Do people go to Qom or not at all from Bangladesh?
I don't think, because there has been very much traffic between Bangladesh and Iran. Yes, there are. I think the first lot of people who really came back were Bangladeshis who came back from Qom. But I'm not sure. I don't know what is the percentage of Shias. I presume it's the same as in India and Pakistan, say about anything between 18 and 20%. So it could potentially be this thing. I really don't know, but I will give, before this is evening, I'll try and get some details.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah, basically, but the first spread was from Italy. And what Suyash mentioned is that currently the number of cases is still low, but there is a high risk of if the community spread starts, it will quickly accelerate. All right. So that was about Bangladesh. We'll go into what India is doing with respect to Bangladesh and other neighbors towards the end. Suresh, what about Sri Lanka?
So similarly, Sri Lanka also got into action pretty early, which is now reflected in the low number of cases that they have. They also have around 200 to 250 cases. But the spike in Sri Lanka is increasing. So the first cases were due to international travel. But here, in case of Sri Lanka, the first confirmed case was reported on 27 January, which was a Chinese woman traveling from Hubei province. Hubei is again the epicenter. It's a place where Wuhan is. So a Chinese woman traveled from Hubei to Sri Lanka, and then she was detected with coronavirus on 27. The administration got into action. The president himself has devoted a lot of fund. Also, one important aspect of Sri Lanka is that their elections are postponed. Their elections were supposed to be held on 23rd or 24th of April, but now they are postponed indefinitely. There is no notification about when the elections would be held. They are saying that they are under a complete lockdown till 15th or 16th of April, and they will take a call depending upon the situation on 15th and 16th of April about the elections. Also one important thing, Pranay, as we are recording this podcast, today morning, the first batch of medicine from HCQ Medicines has reached Sri Lanka from India.
All right. So HCQ, because India is a major manufacturer, looks like there is a demand from India's neighborhood as well, apart from the news of US demanding that India help them in this particular respect. All right, so let's go then to Maldives. Mr. Arni, what's happening in Maldives?
It's not struck them in any great numbers there. Maldives is still under control, though it's about 19 cases, I believe, in this, and quite a few. The exact statistics are not available. Quite a few foreign tourists have brought it in. And those tourists, in one case which I was reading about, South African, he was being confined to the resort he was staying in. And though he has tested negative now, and his wife has also tested negative, the whole island has been sealed. And for the two of them, the entire staff is on duty of that expensive resort. And they could be theoretically spread. But then again, containment is easier. Once you detect, you could probably contain them to that island. The only problem would be if it somehow percolates to Malé. At the moment, there's nothing to worry. They seem to be under control, and they seem to have everything. They seem to have taken the right steps.
Right. Yeah, that the dynamics of Maldives are very interesting, Mr. Arni, now that you mentioned that if the spread is from tourists, they can easily wall off all islands, like you mentioned, so they can restrict that. But if the spread reaches Malé, because it is so densely populated, then it will be very difficult for them to control. So it can possibly be restricted if the detection is early, but if the spread starts, then they'll be in a lot of problem.
Yeah, that's true. In the meantime, I did get the statistics about Bangladesh. The Shia population is only 2%. So there's not going to be much transmission coming in from Iran. 2% right. Of 4 million, 4 or 5 million, not much.
Pranay, I have an interesting question for all of us to ponder upon. Before we go to more hit areas, Bangladesh, Maldives, Sri Lanka, the numbers are less. Maybe because the testing capability is not that much, which was the initial problem in India as well. Maybe it is underreported. These countries are not having enough testing capabilities. That's why the reports are less. We don't know the right number of cases yet, I think so.
Absolutely. No, totally agree. All the countries that we are talking about, including India, actually, the numbers don't reflect the testing capabilities, and the fact that wherever there is low state capacity, we have to keep in mind this caveat that probably the numbers are low because the actual testing is low. Only one thing we can talk about this is that a lot of respiratory problems are difficult to hide. So if there is something which becomes very serious, then it is very difficult to hide, and people have to be put on ventilators, they have to be hospitalized, which means those things will come to in the news, and those will be reflected in the final number. All right, so let's go to some other countries in India's neighborhood. Mr. Arni, you've been looking at Afghanistan, and given that Afghanistan is again close to Iran, there is a lot of migration which happens between the two countries. So what is the current situation in Afghanistan like?
The current situation is the suspected cases are about 450, of which 14 have passed on. But testing is so primitive. Testing, the reach of the health services is still not complete, and testing is so limited. Most of the cases would be in Herat and in the Hazara area, the Shia areas. And even for there are just two centers which can conduct these tests, one in Kandahar and the other in Kabul. So you have limitations there. They have 300, only about 300 ventilators. And in the case, and as I said again, the testing capability is only about 100 in 24 hours. So it's the, those are limitations. They have 3,500 quarantine facilities, that is beds and stuff like and hospitals, whatever, equivalent of hospitals. And in Herat, where the most of the concentration has taken place, most of the ingress from Iran takes place, there are three hospitals which are providing care for the COVID patients. Yesterday, Iran, after their complaints that the Iranians were only looking after their own and ignoring the foreigners, that is, they were looking after their stock and ignoring the Afghans, the Iranian foreign ministers got across to both Abdullah and Ashraf Ghani and told assured them that free there will be free health care to Afghans. That was yesterday. But this is just Afghanistan would only Afghanistan is would be what could I say the worst. You'll have to be prepared for a for the worst in Afghanistan. There is absolutely no health care. There are vast tracts of the country which are outside the purview of this of the Kabul government, and even I believe even the Taliban has sort of indicated that if there are cases in areas controlled by them, they will allow government, they will announce a ceasefire in that area and allow the government to send in health workers. But this is unlikely to really work because nobody really knows what. Yes, there is also the given fact that writ of the state extends to all these areas insofar as healthcare goes. That is, the Taliban has been allowing healthcare workers to go into areas which they have long held. So, yes, but then the healthcare is only limited to some emergency facilities and a routine check, traveling, a doctor who comes in and takes a look and goes away. That's not very satisfactory.
That's what, Mr. Ani, so given that, even I was reading the fact that a lot of migration happens from Afghanistan to Iran because Iran is a bigger economy. There are more employment opportunities. And but still, once this cases started emerging in Iran, there were a lot of news reports that the Afghans were being turned away. And hence, a lot of people chose to come back to Herat. And there were reports in Tolo News, etc., people saying that we will prefer to at least get treated here because no one is even giving us water back in Iran. So that was this feeling which led to a large sort of reverse migration happening in the initial stages. So, and once it reaches Afghanistan, like you said, the numbers are really underestimated. I'm sure there will be more than 450 cases, but because of the low state capacity, those numbers will not come in the front.
There's one more. I just would like to add one point here, Pranay. Most of the guest workers in Iran would probably be Afghan guest workers would probably be from the north, the Dari-speaking area. There'll be very few Pashtuns going there, so you would have to be extra careful in the north.
Oh, interesting. Danny, what would be the? Would there be any impact on the U.S.-Taliban deal which happened recently? Also on the intra-Afghan dialogue which was supposed to take place because of this situation?
Inevitably, there will be some impact with testing facilities being so low. Inevitably, there will be some impact. The Taliban would not want the pandemic to hit them in hit the areas under their control. Neither would Pakistan really want that to happen, because once it hits the areas controlled by the Taliban, its flow into Pakistan will also be, no matter how much you seal the border, the Taliban has been going in and out, and that sort of thing could lead to further spread in Khyber, particularly in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and parts of Balochistan.
What would be a strategy for, let's say, US soldiers are trying to, the US government is trying to attempt a withdrawal, right? Now, given that there are cases in Afghanistan, would the US government prefer to stall the withdrawal for now, given that these people might again lead to increase in number of cases back home?
No, I don't think so. I think they will go ahead with the withdrawal. In fact, they'll try and speed up as fast as possible. They prefer to have their soldiers back home. And most of their soldiers are living in sterile circumstances. There is very little contact between the Afghans and except in, you know, in facilities within the air bases. And that you can control. And even the normal position when you're on patrols is that, I mean, not that they're doing any patrols anymore, but even when you're doing patrols, there is a safe distance between you and between the American soldier and the Afghan citizen, which is maintained. So that all that will help in controlling the spread from Afghans to this. There is a potential for two major bases are really Kandahar and Bagram. Kandahar would be sort of safe in the sense it's in the southern part. The other bases we have to see, it's not really been announced which are the bases that are going to be maintained, but my suspicion would be, my guess would be that the bases that are earmarked to be closed under the agreement in the north will be closed first, particularly the ones in the north will be closed first.
So that was about Afghanistan. On Pakistan, we've recorded a different episode itself, but a few quick updates on the Pakistan situation as well. So currently, the number of cases in Pakistan has exceeded 4,000. It was initially the largest number of cases in the subcontinent were from Pakistan. Now Indian cases have exceeded. And within Pakistan, Sindh was the place which was worst affected initially. Now again, the Punjab numbers are much higher. So the situation began with returnees from Iran, again pilgrims coming through the Taftan border. And after that, the spread has increased. Meanwhile, the government has announced an economic relief package, and they have not talked about how they'll make money to provision for these announcements. But that has been done. Also, an interesting point was that the Imran Khan government has been reluctant to enforce a lockdown, and he has repeatedly went and said that Pakistan cannot afford a lockdown, but the provincial governments went ahead and did the lockdown in any case. And they also got support from the Pakistan Army, and the DGISPR came and said that this is what we support as well. So, Mr. Rani, anything about what is the dynamics of the Pakistan Army, provincial governments and the Imran Khan government happening in this response?
No, let me start by saying that the Pakistan Army would have to undertake, it would be a fairly delicate balancing act for the Pakistan Army. While on one end, they would like to have gone along with Imran Khan to say that the economy comes first, and without a flourishing economy, it's there in their interest also, without a flourishing economy, they can't survive. There would be expectations that they would be the first to have to take a haircut. But they have gone along with the states, and that would be a populist move. It's not some. The Pakistan Army is more into populism than any other instrument of the Pakistan government. And so, therefore, they would have to take this view. What it translates into, they really don't have much of an answer. I'm not sure that the Pakistan Army has any answers on how to handle this situation. They will open up some of their facilities. They will put their army doctors in the front line. They will create more hospital facilities while keeping majority for themselves. They will open up inevitably. Imran Khan has said that he is going to create a force of 750,000 Corona Task Force. I don't know what that means, but that's what he does. So, which means that the army is probably washing its is distancing its. This force will come between the army and the civilians. Since the army has no answers, it would be extremely careful about what it says in the coming weeks, and anything untoward would really reflect on it, on the army's popularity. That's the way I look at it. Yeah.
Do you think there is any implication on India with respect to what the Pakistan army is undergoing? In the sense, do you think they might want to increase the tensions or decrease the tensions now?
It's automatic that both sides will decrease the tensions. This is not a time for either Pakistan or India, or even Pakistan in Afghanistan, to raise the tempo. They have to look after their own thing. I don't think any of the countries has the resources to fight internal problem as well as take on an external enemy. That said, I think there's going to be, if we ignore a province at the expense of Punjab, I mean, push all your logistics into helping Punjab, there is going to be some problems in the other states. This is something that the army will have to be on the lookout for.
Right. There might be a feeling of alienation from other places.
Yes, right. There is. Already there was a situation yesterday when I think some doctors in Baluchistan were beaten up because they demanded protective clothing. And immediately the feeling will be that Baluchis are dispensable, but not Punjabis. You can't have this happening in Lahore. But this is what happened. Pakistan has very little resources at its command to... So they have to be judicious in how to play these resources. If they use it in Punjab, which they will, because Punjab is 60%, and the other smaller states will complain. And it will be the Baluchis who will feel the impact, and the rural Sindhis, the first two cases. Yeah.
Right. So basically, we need to keep a close eye on what's happening in Afghanistan and Pakistan. They appear to be vulnerable. Now, let's get back to the multilateral organization. Suyash, you were looking at what BIMSTEC and SAARC, etc., are they playing any role in this? So what would you like to tell us about that?
Before that, I would like to point our readers to the recent article by the great Henry Kissinger on world order. He basically said that the world order is in threat, and if the pandemic is not managed, there is a likelihood that world order would change. And India, along with similar, India as a country, as a sovereign state, along with this organizations, regional organizations, has a good opportunity to do something that Kissinger has warned. I'll give you an example of India by their bilateral diplomacy and India through their multilateral diplomacy. First, your question regarding multilateral diplomacy. The classic Indian response, India started using SAARC because it is not the right time to isolate Pakistan. To deal with its neighborhood, to deal with the crisis in its neighborhood, because India considers, as David Malone argue, India considers himself as a big brother, and it's the onus of taking care is with India. So, but due to the cold shoulder given to India by Pakistan in the SAARC forum, India's went to the bilateral approach. And I wouldn't be surprised if India goes to BIMSTEC later on. So there will be political criticism of India going to BIMSTEC because Pakistan would be isolated. But the onus of this is on Pakistan because they gave cold shoulder to India. Why BIMSTEC is important in this? Because BIMSTEC works on sectoral basis. There are 14 sectors in BIMSTEC. One of the important sector is health. Every sector is managed by a country. Health sector, the ownership of health sector is with Thailand. Unfortunately, because India has not taken initiative and BIMSTEC is an India-driven organization, BIMSTEC is more or less defunct in this crisis right now. Rejuvenation of BIMSTEC, India has to play a major role, and apparatus already exists in BIMSTEC on dealing with such crisis. Not at this scale per se, but they are dealing, in the past they have dealt with small regional crisis. If there is a breakout of malaria in a certain sector, then BIMSTEC as a forum has been used by this country to solve these issues. I am sure that there are not enough resources to deal with a pandemic at that scale. But yes, BIMSTEC could be used, but there could be a political backlash by Pakistan saying that India is isolating Pakistan.
I will only interrupt 1 minute here, Suesh. I don't think we should pay so much attention to, you can't say cold-shouldered us, because it was a natural, you can't expect a Pakistani minister to come back to a SAARC forum after India did everything to, India did not encourage the forum all these years, and not talk about Kashmir. That had to be done. That is something that you can expect Pakistan to have raised. The only thing you got to do is see how much focus do they have on that. The other bit is that every Pakistani knows that India has depth in its medical facilities. They know that in case of a crisis, they may have to turn to India, like the medical tourism. It's been happening in all these years between India and Pakistan. When there is a health problem, the man in the street in Pakistan prefers to come to India because of language. Where else can they turn? They can't really turn to China, language problems and other issues. So I think there will be an understanding that, yes, we have to keep this line alive because India is important for us, but it will not be a cold shoulder. It will be more of a cautious approach towards India.
I agree, sir. But the hyphenation between India, Pakistan, China always exists, right? Because in case India also offered Pakistan to evacuate its students from Wuhan, which Pakistan declined, why would they come to India when they have China to help them? And China is already doing a lot. Though the reported goods that China is sending is substandard, but they are helping Pakistan a lot in case of medical facilities. So why would they give turn to India? That is my basic argument.
Yeah, because they would want, any help is good help at this point of time. That's the situation.
I agree with you there. Yes, when it comes to the crunch, they will turn to India. If it comes to that situation. Well, they won't like to rule out India. They'll probably turn to China in the first instance, but inevitably they may have to turn. Like if they want a they would need quinine. Yeah, they would probably have to turn to India.
Right. So quickly moving on to the bilateral issues as well. Suresh, anything that India has been doing on that front?
Yes. So the recent approach which has changed. So on Sunday, there was a meeting followed by a Monday meeting, cabinet meeting, after which I think it was decided that if India has enough capabilities or capacities to support its own needs, then India would have a two-pronged approach for its export of HCQs. One would be to the most affected countries, which are US, Italy, Germany, France, and then to its neighborhood. So it would be balanced neighborhood, most affected countries, and then the rest of the world. This is the approach that India is going to take, building its own capability, a minimum stock for its domestic consumption, 5-6 most affected countries and India's neighborhood. I don't know whether Pakistan figures into this, but the dispatch to Indian neighborhood, as we have already pointed out in the podcast, has already started. Sri Lanka got a first dose, first set of medicines. Bangladesh will get it soon. If cases increase in Maldives, Nepal, Bhutan, I'm sure they will get it as well. And US is also getting one. So this is the line of approach that they are adopting in a bilateral framework. For HCQs, using HCQs or medicine.
Yeah. So that is, we have to remember that HCQ as a cure is still questionable and there is still a lot of research happening on that. But beyond that, is there any talk of India providing, say, PPEs, protective equipment or any other collaboration which is happening?
In a limited sense, because we are not yet sure about our capabilities to do so. In a limited sense, yes. But for HCQ, we can definitely say because India has already ramped up. Yesterday, there was a report that India has already ramped up its production by 40%. There is a constraint regarding labor because we are in the lockdown. But HCQ, most definitely, the other facilities, we are getting there, but it may take certain time, at least next a week more because of the lockdown, to ramp up our production.
And I think that will be difficult given our own state capacity limitations. So those constraints will hit us before thinking about the other states as well. All right. So thanks a lot. both of you for joining us on this podcast and discussing what has been the approach of India's neighborhood. The long and short of it is that we have to keep a close watch on what's happening in Afghanistan and Pakistan. These places appear to be more vulnerable compared to the others as of now. And also the fact that there are interesting opportunities for India to also play a role on the multilateral and bilateral fronts in some of the countries in India's neighborhood. All right, so thank you for joining in. Bye.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is at IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle at TakshashilaINST or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.